When I reached here, I asked Piari, knowing the audience, all of you, I wanted to know what topic to discuss this evening. And he said, surrender to Krishna. And then he said, you just open a page in the Bhagavatam and read something and speak and nice. I said, okay. So putting those two things together. Uh-oh. Sequence Srila Prabhupada speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Part 1. And one verse he particularly liked because there were recordings, there were about between 15 and 20 recordings on one verse. And Kechit Kevalaya Maktya Vasudeva Prayana. But then, on the point of surrender a few verses later, Shukadeva Goswami speaks about something that may resonate or relate very easily with everyone. What about those of us who are not realized? How does the process of surrender connect with our situation of life? Anyone feel that they're fully realized at this stage? So, for those of us that aren't, there's a very nice verse, 6th Canto, Chapter 1, Text Number 19. if somebody knows how to make the volume go up, that would be really good. Because my voice is going to strain otherwise. Okay, good, very good. This verse, text 19, comes just before the narration of the Ajamila story. So you know what the Ajamila is. Anybody not know the story of Ajamila? Okay. Once upon a time, and that's kind of how Shukadeva Goswami says, at the end he heard this from one great sage who narrated it to him so long ago in a city known as Kanya Kubja, very near to the present day Kanpur. That's a real place in India, in Uttar Pradesh. There was a Brahmin of the name Ajamila. So it's factual history, and the very brief narration is Ajamila was very qualified. His mother and father were very qualified. He was very dutiful and obedient and well-behaved in his relationship with them and with his spiritual master. He was duly initiated as a brahmana. He was trained in brahminical principles. He was married to a very nice wife. He was good. And then something happened. The something that happened was he got bad association. He got bad association initially just by he was on an errand or some service for his spiritual master, gathering ingredients for a yajna. Went to the forest and he knew the places to go to get the wood and get the the necessary flowers and the necessary minerals and things that were used for the yajna. And on his way back, he saw something that he wasn't used to seeing. He saw a shudra and a prostitute going at it in the forest. And parts of her body were exposed, and they were drunken. And he let it not only enter his eyes, but enter his heart. And he went back to his home, and he tried to get rid of that impression. He did all of the mantras and rituals and tried to do everything to cleanse himself of that impression, but the impression was already made. And he contemplated that impression, and one thing led to the next. He went to find out the prostitute, and then he found her, and then he started visiting her and using whatever he had as the dowry from his wedding to buy nice things for the prostitute as he was enjoying her company. And one thing led to the next. He completely fell down from his brahminical status in the company of the prostitute. Details, minus the details, he left his family, left his wife, left his brahminical practices, left everything good, and became addicted to the association of the prostitute. But then he needed some means to maintain himself in the prostitute, so he didn't know anything but brahminical activity, so he took to stealing and plundering and robbing, and he became a very, very fallen person. And he lived the duration of his life that way. And 10 children later, by the prostitute, he is now an old man and about to die. And as he's breathing his last breath, the Yamadutas have come to take him for all of his sinful activities to the court of Yamaraj. And when he sees the Yamadutas, he becomes very afraid. And in his great fear, he calls out to his youngest son, who he named after the Supreme Lord, Narayana. So that's the story that's being told. Some momentary shelter of Narayana, even inadvertently, he wasn't intending to call the Supreme Lord Narayana, he was intending, "Son, please come and help me, help. Narayana." In a helpless spirit. So the agents of Narayana came. The Vishnudutas came and checked the Yamadutas. Stop. And who has ever stopped death? Answer, nobody. So the Yamadutas were saying, "Who are you? No one stops us. We're the Yamadutas. We're the agents of the Lord of Death. Who are you people?" Never mind that, we'll tell you who you are. If you're the agents of Yamaraj, you describe to us what are the laws of Dharma. You're the agent of Yamaraj, he's the instrument, or he administers Dharma, so you need to know, if you're going to serve him, you need to know Dharma. So I'm giving you a Dharma quiz. And they asked many questions about Dharma. And they almost got an A, except they missed something. They missed the effect of even indirectly or unintentionally calling the name of Narayana. It completely frees one from unlimited volumes of sins for millions of lifetimes. And they got an F. Vishnudutas sent the Avadutas back home. That's never happened to us before. Yamaraj, who are those people? And who are you? If you're not God, I mean, you're the Lord of Death. Is there somebody above you, or is there two gods? They have this, they're really confused. Because if there's two gods, that's going to be a problem. You might have two opinions on the same thing, and then what do you have? It's going to be very problematic. So if you're not God, who's God? And please instruct us if you think we're qualified to understand your instruction. So he gives them the same message. Yeah, I'm not God. There are persons who are servants of God, and I'm trying to be a servant of God. And there are those who know God. There's great authorities that know him. And the science of knowing God depends upon hearing from the proper source and becoming purified by that, from those great authorities. And Yamaraj also explains then the theology of the holy name. The Vishnudutas explain it, Yamaraj explains it, and Shukadeva Goswami again summarizes. So it's a very important section of the Bhagavatam on the importance of chanting the holy name, something that we do regularly. So what's the scriptural authority for it? Besides, it's nice. And Lord Chaitanya said it. What's the scriptural authority? It's right in this first three chapters of the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. So the verse that I want to read is just before the narration of the Ajamila story. It starts sakrit. Sakrit means just once. Sakrit, krit means to do. So even once, those of you that know the Bhagavatam will recognize this. Sakrin mana krishna padara vindayor. There's a nice verse in the ninth canto Srimad Bhagavatam. Different king besides Maharaj. It's Maharaj Ambarish, and Maharaj Ambarish perfected his life by following the process of engaging all of his senses in the service of Krishna, starting with the mind. So it resonates the same. Sakrin mana krishna padara vindayor. Even once having done that, what to speak of Maharaj Ambarish, who did it regularly, but Ajamila just did it even once. He was Narayana, just once, even indirectly. Sakrin mana krishna padara vindayo niveshitam saguna ragi yayar iha. Ragi's kind of food, right? This is a different kind of brahmi. This is as in raga, as in being attached to. So one who becomes attached to tan guna ragi yairiha. The one who becomes attached to the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tan is a pronoun, tat. He. So, here's the translation. Although not having fully realized Krishna, that's us, persons who have even once surrendered fully unto his lotus feet and who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, are completely free from all sinful reactions. For they have thus accepted the true method of atonement. this question of atonement has to do with when you do something wrong or bad or sinful, there is a reaction. And you have to suffer for that reaction. It's just action, reaction. And Maharaj Pariksit has asked Shukadeva Goswami about becoming free from the reactions that result in persons having to go to the hellish planets, because this is the beginning of the sixth canto. The end of the fifth canto is a whole description of the cosmos, the configuration of the universe. So it describes this earthly realm, it describes the heavenly realm, and it describes the lower realm. And it ends up describing the lower realm, and the lower realm is terrifying. Very, 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 very horrible suffering in the hellish planets. And Maharaj Pariksit is a compassionate king. So when he hears this horrible experience that people have to experience in the hellish planets, he asks a compassionate question. What can be done to help them from having to experience that? And stepping back from the question he's asking, it's a question that all religions of the world address, because how do you relieve yourselves from sin? Think about it. Each religion has its methodology or approach or ideology or theology how to become free from sin. What the Bhagavatam does is, rather than saying this ism, that ism, another ism, the Bhagavatam is explaining principles. And in principle, there's karma, gyan, and bhakti, just to keep it very short. So there's processes within religions that you can do some procedure, karma, atonement, or in Sanskrit it's prayaschitta. You can do something to neutralize another something. A reaction, a sin, a reaction for the sin, neutralizing the reaction to the sin. So it's not just a pious activity, because a pious activity generates another pious reaction. It's specific. It's a formula for neutralizing reactions. And in the Christian tradition, there are such things as confession. Used to within the Catholic Church, that's one of the processes of neutralizing reactions. Or some austerity, or some something that's specific of religion by religion, to neutralize bad karma or reactions to sins. When Shukadeva Goswami offers that as a possibility, Maharaj Pariksit, he is also being examined. Maharaj Pariksit says that may work to neutralize the reaction, but what about the tendency to do the same thing again? It doesn't take away the tendency to do the same thing again. And so Maharaj Pariksit then hears a second option. Gyan. Very good. You've listened very carefully to my teachings. You're right. Karmakanda or prayaschitta or atonement is not sufficient. Neutralizing a bad action with the process of atonement is not sufficient. One needs to have knowledge. Because if you have knowledge, then the tendency to do the same thing again is reduced. But that's limited also, because the world is filled with circumstances where we know that something shouldn't be done, and we do it anyway. I mean, not necessarily something sinful, but every one of us, you know, very carefully reading the scripture, considering our lives, if this particular thing, if I did this particular thing, it would benefit me, I should do it. And we don't do it. Or the other way. here's something that really I shouldn't do. If I could not do this one particular thing, it would really benefit me. We've considered it from all angles. Knowledge is there. And we still do it. So knowledge alone is not enough. Gyan and karma are insufficient. They're good, but they're insufficient. And so this verse that Shukadeva Goswami speaks, that Prabhupada, I just heard Prabhupada lecture 20 times, is kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham. Agham means sins. Even sounds like it. Agham. Like yuck or something. Okay. Agham dunvanti karchneya niharam eva bhaskaram. Just like bhaskar, when the sunlight directly shines on fog or mist, at once the fog and mist is dispelled. And similarly, by kevala bhakti, that's a strong word, kevala, like absolute, nothing but 100% devotion, vasudeva parayana, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, that's who vasudeva is, one accepts in his one's very life. There's a rare person who does that, kechit. Not everybody's going to do that, but if there is a rare person that does that, even if it's just once, and even if it's, the commentary explains, even if it's indirect, like you don't intend to do it, but you do it. Like Ajamila, he didn't intend. Let's see, I've got a big problem here. Here's the Yamadutas. Narayana! It wasn't like that. It was, my son, help me. You just have to be named Narayana. His good fortune that in his youth he was trained as a Vaishnava, as a devotee of the Lord, and so he named his 10th son Narayana. So he called his son out of attachment for his son. Unintentional. Hela Namavas, there's even a name for it. It's a reflection, unintentional reflection. So powerful that all of his sinful reactions were eliminated. Confirmed by the Vishnu Dutas, Yamaraj, and Shukadeva Goswami. So here, following that verse is, even if the realization isn't complete, it's so, what to speak of, so, if there's a moment in our life that we feel very dependent upon the personality of Godhead, generally that's like circumstantial, you know, something really difficult. Oh, Krishna! And then the problem goes away and it's business as usual. Just what's coming to mind is in New York City after 9/11, everyone became very reverential. I mean, most everyone in New York. You know, brash New Yorkers became reverential. But it was true. I wasn't in New York at the time, but Chandrasekhar Swami was. And they had the lower, from Houston Street down. If you didn't live there, you couldn't go. You had to show your residence, and then you could walk. There's no transportation. Everything was, and above, he said, at every corner, when people had to, you know, crosswalk, and normally, you know, the New Yorkers, they're halfway across the street, just waiting for the cars to not be flowing even when it's red, to walk. Don't walk, they're walking. You know, New York. So they stopped, and at the lamppost on the corner, they built a little shrine. Every corner, on all four corners, a little place where people would offer incense or candles or flowers and offer prayers, and they were reverential. New York. We decided to, that one of the places that was the prayer place kind of evolved like that, Union Square Park. Those of you who've been to New York know that place. 14th Street, where Broadway and Fifth Avenue come. So, nice little kind of cemented area in the front, and people would, this group would pray, and those, that people would sing hymns, and those people, the Buddhists would chant, and, you know, everyone was getting along with everybody. And everybody was like really religious, and that's where people went to like get the vibration of being religious. So, we decided we have one person, no instruments except a harmonium, very softly singing Hare Krishna. And a sign, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to men, something, you know, very innocuous. If you want spiritual counseling, you know, contact 26 Second Avenue in the evening. Something. So after a month, we decided we would go with more than one person. So a dozen of us went and sat down, no standing, and, you know, very sedate, one pair of kartals, one soft mridanga, one harmonium singing. As soon as we sat down, there was a big crowd. I felt like we were back in the 60s. And people were praying. You know, people in business suits came and sat with us, over with the ladies. A model went and sat down. And, like, you know, closed her eyes and was singing with the devotees. And it was amazing. You know, people were crying. Just seeing, you know, they were very reverential. Go to Union Square now and see what's happening. Sukrit, even once, those persons that were calling Krishna's holy name with some genuine feeling, they shared afterwards, you know, I really felt something. Anyway, that's very powerful, because it's not only the mood, that's the sentiment, but the name of Krishna is present. So, although having not fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once surrendered completely, well, that kind of eliminates us, because we're always holding on to something. Niveshitam is the Sanskrit word. Completely surrendered. It's very similar to Kevala Bhakti. Kevalaya Bhaktiya. Kevala is a word that impersonalists like. Absolute monism. Kevala Advaita. That's Shankaracharya. Kevala Advaita. Ours is Kevala Bhakti. Absolutely devotional service. Nothing else. Even once, having, whatever the circumstance that may bring that about, of course, in devotion, we try to cultivate that purposefully. And the lectures that Prabhupada was lecturing on this verse, he lectured not 20 times, but a number of times. His explanation was that what to speak of even once for someone who is consciously cultivating, remembering Krishna. That's what we're to be doing. By sadhana, to remember Krishna. And we have a number of ways to help us remember Krishna, like Hare Krishna, or, you know, our conventional thing that we say to each other all the time, Hare Bol. But kind of we do it mindlessly, like Hare Bol. Like a parrot. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Without being present, we're calling the holy name. So this is with some quality, with the quality of surrender to Krishna. At least trying to surrender to Krishna. You know, our surrender muscle may be pretty weak, but if we exercise our surrender muscle, it gets, you know, a little stronger. Striving to take shelter of Krishna. And who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. I heard you had a very nice Radhashtami festival here on Wednesday. Those of you that attended, can you just indicate? Wednesday, Radhashtami festival. If you aren't, those of you, here you are. There was, I was in Boston for Radhashtami, and oh, it's very nice. I mean, it's not a big temple room, but the place was packed. Packed. Out in the hall, packed. And very nice kirtan. Some nice pictures of Radha and some stories about Radharani, and then a nice aarti and a nice festival. Radhashtami. That's attraction, at least cultivation of attraction for Radha Krishna. That's what we're striving through sadhana bhakti. By doing those things, complete surrender and becoming attracted to Radha Krishna, their pastimes, form, qualities, name, the potency is there that one can become completely free from sin. All, not just this, you know, something you did a little while ago that's troubling you, but lifetimes, it's very powerful. Even once, even indirectly. So he then narrates the Ajamila story to verify or to support this statement. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls do not see Yamaraj or his order carriers, who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. It's a 2.5-page purport. I'll just read part of how Prabhupada describes it here. He quotes the Sarvadharmam Vridyaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja verse from Bhagavad Gita, and says the same principle is described here. Namely, Sakrinmana Krishna Padara Vindayo. If by studying Bhagavad Gita one decides to surrender to Krishna, he is immediately freed from all sensual reactions. It is also significant that Shukadeva Goswami, having several times repeated the word Vasudeva Parayana and Narayana Parayana, finally says Krishna Padara Vindayo. Thus he indicates that Krishna is the origin of both Narayana and Vasudeva. Even though Narayana and Vasudeva are not different from Krishna, simply by surrendering to Krishna, one fully surrenders to all his expansions, such as Narayana, Vasudeva, and Govinda. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7:7, Mata Parataram Nanya, there is no truth superior to me. There are many names and forms of the Supreme Personality Godhead, but Krishna is the Supreme Form, Krishna is to Bhagavan Svayam. Therefore Krishna recommends to kneel by devotees, that one should surrender unto him only, mam ekam. Because neophyte devotees cannot understand what the forms of Narayan, Vasudeva, and Govinda are, Krishna directly says, mam ekam. Herein, this is also supported by Krishna, padaravindayo. The lotus feet, pada aravinda, the lotus feet of Krishna. Just remember the lotus feet of Krishna, or surrender to them. Narayan does not speak personally, but Krishna, or Vasudeva, does, as in Bhagavad Gita, for example. Parikshit Maharaj had inquired from Shukadeva Goswami how one can be saved from falling into the various conditions of hellish life. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami answers that a soul who has surrendered to Krishna certainly cannot go to Naraka or hellish existence, to say nothing of going there. Even in dreams, he does not see Yamaraj or his order carriers who are able to take one there. In other words, if one wants to save himself from falling into Naraka, hellish life, he should fully surrender to Krishna. But that's our theology. How to protect one from sinful reaction. Again, different religions have their different theologies. This is not an ism like, you know, this ism, that ism. It's a principle. It's a principle of, remember, take shelter of the personality of Godhead. It sure helps to know who he is. Sure helps to know who he is. Just like coming from Boston to visit here in Hartford. Fortunately, our driver knew what the destination was and how to get here. Because, you know, you just get in your car and start driving, and where are we going? We're going to Hartford. Do you know how to get there? No. I just thought we'd get in the car and we'd get there. Good luck. If something that the Prabhupada taught, it's very simple, but very powerful. When you have a very clear understanding of a goal, it's very easy to take steps to reach the goal. Conversely, if you don't have a very clear sense of what the goal is, it's pretty hard to get there. Like, you know, what's life? Like just 2 nights ago, there's this discussion at MIT, and some of the students are asking, what's the goal of life? That's a great question. But, you know, imagine having the intellect of an MIT student and not knowing what the goal of life is. Like, what's that experience like? Whoa. And what's happiness? It's good to ask the questions. But if one doesn't even ask the question, but to speak of, no, you know, I may not be experiencing that goal or the happiness of life, but if I don't even have a clue what it is, what to speak of, ask what it is, good luck getting there. It's like getting in your car and going for a ride. And where are you going? Well, I'm going for a ride. Hope you get there. One of the young Indian graduate students, you know, the as far as I know, it's an American nursery rhyme. Row, row, row your boat. You know that one? Gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a dream. I don't know where I picked that up from somewhere as a kid growing up, but like nothing matters. Because what's life? It's just a dream. Where is the dream going? Doesn't matter. Just row your boat. Just do your thing. Just experience. Where are you going? I'm experiencing. I'm on a journey. Life is a journey. Where are you headed to, Father? Nowhere, just a journey. So to take shelter of Krishna, it helps to know who is Krishna. Prabhupada would sometimes say, we have his address, we have his name, we even have his phone number. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And Krishna answers, hello. So, the details, as mentioned in the translation here, the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, it helps to be inspired to love someone, to know about that someone. And the scriptures, like Srimad Bhagavatam, gives us such rich understanding of Krishna. His form, his qualities, his abode, his pastimes, his loving associates, how he exchanges with them in so many different attractive ways. It's easy to love him. It's easy to be inspired to take shelter at his lotus feet. So the recommendation is, absorb yourself in these wonderful literatures that Srila Prabhupada has provided us so generously. They're there for us. They're shelter. Just this morning, I think it was this morning, there was a question in our morning class about what are ways that we can take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. For starters, read first and second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, because according to the Padma Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary form of the Lord, and the first two cantos are his lotus feet. So don't just read them once, read them again and again and again and again. And as you become familiar with Krishna's lotus feet, they're very sweet. And you want to taste the sweetness of those lotus feet again and again and again and again and again. And it becomes not something that's just like out there or maybe on a bookshelf, it's something that you carry within your heart. That's how Srimad Bhagavatam works. It's not just, you know, information or something that's interesting or inspiring. It's all those things. But it transforms the heart, and it places in your heart the lotus feet of Krishna. And then by more fully absorbing yourself in the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, its spiritual vibration, you feel Krishna's presence. The way that you experience life and see the world changes, becomes spiritualized through this wonderful process. You can't say that about so many literatures that are available for people to read in the marketplace, even the spiritual marketplace. You can't say the same thing. A clear understanding of Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's loving nature, his exchanges with his loving devotees, his abode, his glories, his attributes. It's filled with such appreciation. It transports you to the spiritual world, starting with taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So, Sakrit Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. Even once. Try it. Even once. Even if you're not perfectly realized. Just take that bold plunge and surrender to Krishna. And here, become attracted to his qualities and form and so on. The authority of Srimad Bhagavatam is stating, triple fold, all central reactions are neutralized by that. So much so there's no question of going to the hellish planets. One will never even in your dreams see the agents that would take you there, were that to be the outcome. We can change our destiny by taking shelter of Krishna. Okay. I try to follow Piyari's suggestion. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
The verse where you're reading that one completely surrenders even once. And you mentioned something like, well, it's not us. I'm not sure what does it mean, completely surrendered even once. To me, it means like I completely took shelter of Krishna, but then after a little while, I get back into my, just like you mentioned, when you gave examples of, you know, 9/11, when people then surrendered, you know. So it seems like, as devotees, I would think most people have completely surrendered at least once. but what does it mean exactly?
One outcome from having completely surrendered just once is one will not glide down into the lower species of life. Because that's what happens. When the Yamadutas come, that's what happens next or later. Prabhupada even said, just wear neck beads. And how much surrender does it take to wear neck beads? But wear neck beads and the Yamadutas won't touch you because they understand, oh, this is agents of, representatives of Vishnu, the servants of Vishnu. Don't touch them. So in Bhagavad Gita, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. That verse is there. Svalpam means very little, alpa. Even if one does a little devotional service in this life, in the next life, they're saved from mahabaya. And Prabhupada explains, what is mahabaya, the greatest fear? Seeing the Yamadutas, they're very fearful. And what comes along with seeing them is also very fearful. Down to the hellish planets, following the hellish planets, the lower species of life. For one who engages even a little devotional service, they're guaranteed in their next life two things: a human form, an opportunity to continue devotional service wherever they left off. Even a little. I remember very vividly hearing Srila Prabhupada in our Brooklyn temple in a hot July summer day, speaking in a thunderous tone, Krishna will never forget. He's so grateful. Any devotional service you do, and his voice went up in volumes, even the slightest devotional service, even you come to Krishna's temple and turn one screw, Krishna will never forget. That was his example. And I was thinking, you know, we have people that come to the temple, they do some little something, but Krishna's so, his nature is, he's so kind, he never forgets. They may forget. So your question is, you know, every one of us have done something. We may forget. We may get covered over again. Krishna doesn't forget. Krishna remembers that service. And the protection is we don't have to see, even in our dreams, what to speak of at the end of life, the Yamadutas come and take us away. It's so powerful. So, take the example of those people, the 9/11 people, and they're praying to God. They forgot, they're covered over again now. But that sincere calling, that's a great benediction for them. How many simple activities? Too many to count. But they've received a great benefit. Now, that's not what we're recommended to. Okay, leave it at that. We're recommended to continue practicing sadhana bhakti diligently, thoughtfully. It tells us what a powerful process we have. We should really fully take shelter of it. But even if it's just once, it's not diminished. Very powerful. And that's exactly how Prabhupada was taking this. What to speak of persons that are practicing devotional service, what to speak of the devotees of the Lord that are always remembering Him, what to speak of the residents of Vrindavan, of course, their love for Krishna is unparalleled, what to speak of the gopis. So, how exalted are they? But now back to where we are. We're protected by that little moment or the multiple moments, and our progress is, you know, more moments. So it's a continuum, not just, you know, intervals of moments through practice of sadhana bhakti.
I have one more question.
Sure.
About Ajaneel and the way he was telling the story, which sounds, from what I remember, it sounds exactly right. I'm not finding any fault with anything he said.
Fine.
Except, we look at Ajaneel, and he grew up in this really very nice Brahmin family, all these good qualities. He had a good wife. He had so much.
He had everything. He had going.
And so what is our hope, you know, grew up in, really?
Some other situation.
What?
Some other situation without detailing it. Yeah, our fallback position is, you know, practically bottomless jagged rocks at the bottom. So don't slip. Don't let go. But, the principle of how that happened to Ajaneel was my thought is, I was visiting in Hong Kong for some meetings amongst the devotees there, and they were discussing this section of the Bhagavatam, so I had to correct them. Narayana, because it's not Narayan, it's Narayana, and it's Ajaneel. That's his name, Ajaneel. That's not Ajaneel, it's Ajaneel. That's a detail. So Ajaneel had a good beginning, but that good beginning wasn't, it was covered, but because of that good beginning, two things. He named his son Narayana. And the second thing is, at least one of our acharyas, Viraraghava Acharya, says, when he was calling for his son, he called with such desperation that he actually then remembered Narayana. So it wasn't gone. His background wasn't taken away from him. It was covered. Very covered. So what about our background? Well, we should be cautious because our background isn't Vajamila's background. Our background is like, so we have to be more careful. It's not like, you know, petrified. Just be careful. Especially be careful of what happened to Ajaneel, bad association. Bad association, Prabhupada said like this, in any individual's case where you see bad character, you can trace it back to bad association. Even Krishna's own son became corrupted by bad association. He became Banasura. Excuse me, Bhomasura, other, or Narakasura, because of Banasura's association. A good person can become corrupted by bad association. So naturally, parents, for example, they're very careful who their children associate with, because bad company, they can become corrupted, even their good training, upbringing, good situation. So we should be careful about the association we keep. And Lord Chaitanya taught the same thing. In one conversation, the principal characteristic of a Vaishnava is asat sangat tyag e Vaishnava cha. A devotee is one who very carefully stays away from unwholesome association. That's a Vaishnava. We said that preserves our Vaishnava standing. If we're casual about it, then we can become influenced by that bad association. Even good training, good background. We have to be careful, discriminating, particularly with whom we intimately associate. Anything else? Yeah?
You talked about circumstantial surrender and dependence on Krishna.
Circumstantial surrendering unto Krishna.
There are two questions I have on that. What are the ways in which we can be really present, like, because most of the time surrender is because of the
circumstances.
So is there any ways where
you
we
practice.
Can...
Practice. You practice. Think, one of the ways to think is how you would like someone to be present with you. And as you would like someone to be present with you, be present with Krishna. Instead of someone's calling your name and ignoring you. You might not come too many times if it's like they call your name and you're just like ignoring you. And continue to call your name. Why are you calling my name? You might be insulted or something. But Krishna's very kind. He doesn't become insulted. We don't get the full benefit of chanting if we're like that. So be thoughtful of the fact that Krishna and Krishna's name are not different, or Krishna is really a person. And we're just, you know, our conditioning is impersonal and personalism. It's the hard-heartedness that we have. So strive, practice personalism, and not wait for the circumstance to bring us to the point where we're being attentive in a personal way to Krishna. But because we want to. We want to, our relationship to Krishna. Try it like that. Cultivate like that. And?
The second part was...
After her second question. Yeah.
The tendency to dismiss the feelings that... It's a mixed up feeling, but even the spiritual, the pure, the sincere part, like I tend to dismiss, oh, that was not a surrender, that was not the real feeling I had. So, talking about the circumstantial dependence,
yeah.
The tendency to dismiss.
Even that which is genuine.
Yeah. Because in the whole thing ends up being not feeling good about it, because just dismissing that it's circumstantial surrender. So is there any importance to really feel?
Is there importance to really what?
Really feel good about, like, that I took this step, or because instead of...
What's important is that we have a relationship with Krishna, and like the example from this morning, a child that learns to walk, there's stumbling and tumbling, and they get up and take a couple steps and stumble into it. So even with our attempts to connect sincerely with Krishna, it may be kind of inept. And even if it's sincere, we may like not be so in tune with what we really mean to do and need to do and so on. But just don't worry about it. Keep going. And once it, when you renew your effort to sincerely take shelter of Krishna, try to do, don't worry about the last one or the next one, just the one that you're presently doing. Make it, offer it with sincerity. Because the tendency is there, that the that we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. It's innate within the heart. And if we continue striving to act upon it in the moment, then we'll feel that connection.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I have this question, like, the purpose of life is to get attached to the lotus feet.
Wow. Purpose of life is?
To get attached to the lotus feet of the Lord.
Yeah.
And do the service, devotional service. But when we are trying to do the devotional service, but same time we have so many desires and our attachment to Lord is there, but it is not full.
It's mixed.
Yeah. When do we reach that stage of Panya Vilashita Shunya?
It's cultivation. Exactly the verse that you're referring to, Rupa Goswami answers by Anushilana Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnanakarma Dinavatam Anukonyena Krishna Anushilana. You read in the introduction to Nectar Devotion, and you read the Prabhupada describes devotional service as a kind of cultivation. That word cultivation is his rendering of Anushilana. Or as I'm saying here, we practice. You cultivate. Okay, the goal is unalloyed surrender. I'm over here. There's some surrender, and there's some other stuff going on. Goal and where I am. Let me cultivate. So now I know what the goal is. Now I can take steps to reach the goal. And let me hear more about these wonderful lotus feet of Krishna that inspire me, or Krishna's wonderful qualities, or Krishna's exchanges with his devotees. I'm more inspired. I'm ready to take another step. Not so-called, but factually. Another step and another step. And keep taking little steps towards the goal. We'll get there.
But whatever you do, you feel that it's less.
That's okay. It's both honest and it's humble. Take another step. Don't let that recognition of the distance between where you are and the goal is to discourage you. It's just, that's reality. That's where we are. Accept it, then take another step, because the goal is something worthy. Imagine being in a ship in the middle of the storm at night, and you don't know where you are, and you see in the distance a light. Just keep heading for the light. And the wind blows this way, and the wind blows that way. Keep heading for the light. What's the goal? Be clear what the goal is. And keep striving for the goal, rather than, no, I'm so far from the goal. Oh, I have this bad quality, I have this shortcoming. The process of bhakti will carry you there, be clear what the goal is, and step by step, you'll reach it. The qualification to reach it is one's sincerity to reach it, the sincere desire to do so. Rupa Goswami teaching. You had two hands up. Go ahead and She had her hand up before you did, actually. Go ahead. Go ahead. All right.
I sometimes get confused what is surrender. I understand keep the goal and try to go towards it by constantly trying to go in that direction. Like for example, I was driving here and I knew the program is starting at 5:30 and I knew I'd be late with the traffic jam and the work. And I thought, okay, if Krishna wants, I'll just have darshan. And then the moment I entered the lecture started, I thought, oh, Krishna is so kind. Is that surrender? Or is it whatever Krishna does is surrender? Or what do I call surrender? Is that just stop thinking about things and Krishna will take care of it? And you just... I get very confused on that.
I'm looking at PRE. And the program is at 6:30, not 5:30.
Oh, that's why I reached
early. But because you read 5:30, you're so surrendered, you read 5:30. You got here in time, even though it was a traffic jam.
I tend to do that, because when I feel at work, I'm not able to do, oh my God, will they fire me? And okay, whatever Krishna wants, I surrender.
Well, the science of... We can go into the particulars of what happened this evening, but step back for a moment. And there are standards. It's in Nectar Devotion. It's quoted from Padma Purana. There's six symptoms of surrender. Find it in Nectar Devotion, but I'll recite it for you quickly. Those things that are favorable for devotion to Krishna, you accept them. Those things that are unfavorable for devotion to Krishna, you reject them. That's the first two. As far as my personal maintenance is concerned, I understand it's Krishna that's maintaining me, it's not my work that's maintaining me. I'm working, but Krishna is my maintainer, not my boss, not me, not my husband, not, you know, the man on the moon. It's Krishna is maintaining me. Krishna is my protector. I'm concerned about safety. Krishna is my... It doesn't mean I, you know, walk across the highway rush hour thinking Krishna will protect me. I take precaution, but ultimately Krishna is my protector. I don't make Krishna serve me, but ultimately Krishna is my protector. That's a principle of surrender. Feeling that, having that sense about one's existence, Krishna is my protector. Humility. It's a symptom of surrender. I'm dependent upon him. And dedication, full dedication of body, mind, and words to service of Krishna. So there's six standards. They're scriptural. And you can, you know, it's not like, you know, you do a running checklist all the time, but those are the standards against which you examine something and say, is that surrender? You follow? You hold it. You hold an object to the light if you want to see exactly what it is. And you know what the standard is because you've taken the time to learn the science of what the thing is, and you hold it to some light. Hold it to the light of what the standards of surrender are, and then you can get the answer to your question. Is that surrender? It's not. So, in some cases, it's, I just depend upon Krishna. You know, but it's not, I just throw my hands up in the air and say, you know, whatever happens, happens, and that's surrender. I'm purposeful, but because I'm a servant. But the ultimately, the circumstances that come my way, that's up to Krishna. Okay? Then it's a lot of fine adjustments, but so rather than go through the fine adjustments, take the principles and take a look at your life or a particular event or incident or circumstance and hold it to the light of those standards. And take guidance from the experienced devotee so, you know, you can check yourself. Am I correct here? Am I understanding?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
from Ajamila's story, yeah. by just by seeing one negative thing, it brought him down. We have several bad impressions on our mind, like baggage that I should speak for myself. I have a lot of baggage. So how do you get rid of those previous experiences and move? And a lot of times you leave them behind, but then they come back in strange ways. Yeah. So they keep coming back periodically. So how do you completely erase them that they don't come back at all?
Well, one of the things, that there's, I'll say two things. To come to the stage of, we'll go up and then we'll come down. To the stage of shuddha bhakti, you have to pay the price. Or say it the other way. For those impure deeds, you pay the price. They come in the form of remembrances. But don't act, the lower thing is don't act on them. Some bad remembrances. You don't act on them. A materialist, that's like, they're consumed by them. It's like, that's what they did. When they remember something, that's what happened to Ajamila. He let go of the shelter of Narayan, the Supreme Lord, and he took shelter of this meditation on this impression. So, don't, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, na sate vidite bhavo na bhavo vidite sataha. Nice verse. I quote it often. Upayor api drishnam jastvanios tattva darshibi. It simply, those things that are asat just don't invest consciousness in them, but rather invest consciousness in sat. We have free will for making conscious choices all the time. Make the conscious choice that the bad remembrance comes. This is down here now. The bad thought, something, as you say, baggage, and it's churning. Don't invest consciousness in it. Rather, invest consciousness in sat. Something that's in relation to absolute realm. Something. Pick up your bead bag and chant. And the mind is saying, no, don't. Pay attention to this baggage. You consciously invest consciousness inside. Something. Read a verse. Say a prayer. See a picture. Something. And don't yield to that. So that's like, determination. There's that struggle with the mind, but we know what Krishna says about that struggle with the mind. Those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. Daiviyeshu gunamai mama maya dura kaya. You know the verse? Mam eliye prapadyante mayanitam tarantite. They can easily cross beyond it if they surrender to me. So here we are with this word surrender again. I don't surrender to the mode of ignorance, the mind's impure reminiscences. I don't surrender to it. I have a choice. I don't have to surrender. I don't surrender. Let me surrender to Krishna. And one who surrenders to Krishna can easily cross beyond. The struggle is passed on the other side of material existence. But to speak of that little struggle of some baggage. So now, the earlier statement. Only when we come to the position of shuddha bhakti will not be disturbed by those things. Until we're at the plane of shuddha bhakti, we'll be disturbed by those things. Now you have choices to make. We're down here. But your question was, when will that point in time come when I'll not be disturbed by these things? When you're at the point of shuddha bhakti, it's gone. It's like, Gone. What a relief. Gone. Kapiladeva says to Devahuti, by the process of bhakti, the mind is dissolved. The material mind. What a relief, huh? It's just an instrument awarded to the conditioned living entity to try to be the enjoyer of that he's not entitled to be the enjoyer of. Matter through the material senses. And the mind is the steering mechanism that helps you get there. Bring the senses to the sense objects to try to enjoy. And the intelligence is the driver. The bhakti process, the material mind dissolves. Like Alka-Seltzer commercial or something. Gone. What a relief. But there's a price you have to pay. That's full surrender. So now we're back down here. We're not at full surrender. You're making choices whether we're going to surrender to the mind or surrender to Krishna. Surrender to asat or surrender to sat. Invest consciousness in the temporary circumstances or invest consciousness in the realm of the eternal. And Krishna gives us the option. He gives us the faculties. He gives us the instruction. And we make the choices. He gives us association. He gives us his literature. He gives us the holy name. He gives us his unalloyed pure devotee. He gives us deities. He gives us everything that we need. We just have to choose properly. And practice choosing properly. And practice choosing properly. And practice choosing properly. And it becomes second nature. You choose properly. Practice becomes second nature, Prabhupada taught. So we have resources that we can bring to bear on making the proper choices. The baggage is not the problem. It's our tendency, stubborn tendency, to continue making foolish choices. We don't have to. Like this earlier question of circumstances. Surrender because of circumstances. I just don't like to suffer. And it's about me, not about what Krishna did. I don't like to suffer. Some other things I can deal with. You know, so we're making choices all the time. It's constitutional for the soul, we're always making choices. Choose Krishna. Practice. Sat. Instead of asat.
Thank you.
Okay. Pierre, you want to finish up here?
I wanted to make one comment about that question.
Okay.
It seems like when you're up there, not down here.
Should have up here.
Yeah. It's not that these thoughts don't come, but the way we look at them is not the same. Like thinking of Jamunacharya,
yes.
When he thinks of his past sex life, his lips curl and he spits at the thought. So he doesn't look at it the way he looked at it previously.
I had this lively discussion with Bhakti Rupa on that verse by Jamunacharya. We differed.
What was his view?
His view was what you just said. And my view was, he's speaking so that we'll know how to behave when we have such thoughts.
I don't know, for sure, Prabhupada even gave the example of himself. He thinks about his past, you know, with his wife. He thinks of his wife, but he doesn't go back. He said that. So it's not that now that I'm pure devotee, these thoughts of my wife don't come anymore. You still thought of it.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
That's okay. It's quite okay.
I'm saying bhakti.
Quite okay. Quite okay. And in either case, okay. Let's say in our present circumstance, here's what happened to Ajamila. He saw a prostitute and a Shudra in a drunken state doing their thing. Prabhupada's comment is, in Kali Yuga, this is every day. You know, in the billboards or movies, and, in your face. So those impressions are there. We're not, just one time going through the forest and gathering ingredients for the market. It's common fare. So now, how to deal with going forward in time and such impressions are coming. For one who is a pure devotee, Jimunacharya-like or Srila Prabhupada-like, how do they process it? Regardless of whether they're remembering something, just new stuff. Certainly, as you said, they see it differently. They see here's the modes of nature manifesting themselves in this way and manifesting in that way. Variegatedness of Krishna's creation and the modes of nature are fascinating. It has nothing to do with who we are, and yet the living entities are completely caught up in those behaviors and those emotions, having everything to do with illusion and having nothing to do with reality. There's a detachment through being connected with Krishna, which you could, you know, goes to how they process remembrances of previous experiences, not only in this life, in previous lives also. How many lifetimes we've wasted in misuse of our free will. Anything else? This side of the room has been silent. We need some activity over here. Okay.
Left side of the brain is more active.
They're too close to the speaker. Okay. Thank you very much. Shilipo, Dean.